Thanks so much for joining us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're turning our attention now to the science of color. Different colors, I think, mean different things to people. Some say red makes you feel hungry or maybe angry. Yellow, you know, all those smiley faces are yellow. I think, they've supposedly yellow inspires happiness. Blue is soothing. And for the next half hour, we'll talk about the science of color, the meanings, the feelings, the behaviors they promote with our guest, Karen Schloss, as an associate professor of cognition in UW-Madison's Department of Psychology and the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. Her visual reasoning lab studies how people interpret meaning from visual features with a focus on color. So, what's your favorite color? Why is it? What does the color mean to you? How does it make you feel better, maybe? Or are there colors that you just don't like? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you can email us to talk@WPR.org. Karen Schloss, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So your research looks at color semantics.
Yes. So I'm interested in the meaning people ascribe to color. So if I were to give you a map of, say, different amounts of snowfall and ask you where there's going to be more or less snowfall, how can we design a map that you know that without any legends or labels giving you the answer? Or if I give you a set of bins to throw away your trash and recyclables. Is there a way that we can do that where you know from the color where, say, your trash and your compost should go and without any kinds of legends or labels? And that's the kind of work that my lab does.
Yeah. Well, I've got a yellow disposable garbage thing, and I've got a green one. And the green one is where I put the recyclables, and the yellow, or the tan, I guess I could call it. It's the city of Madison's.
Yes, so there will be some conventions within cities, but if we give people on a computer a bunch of different bins and ask them which bin is for paper, plastic, glass, metal, compost, and trash, so six different kinds of things,
yeah. We
can design colors so people know exactly where those objects should go without any legends or labels. And the reason we can do that is because people have associations between colors and concepts. So if I give you the concept paper and I ask you for a bunch of colors, how much do you associate this concept with all these different colors? And I do the same thing with plastic, trash, metal, and compost, and so on. We can think of associations as distributions over all of the colors that we can see. And the same thing goes with emotion. So you mentioned at the beginning the idea that maybe red is angry or yellow is happy. But the idea is it's not that there's just a one-to-one mapping between a color and emotion. So light colors generally are associated with happiness.
Okay.
Darker ones are associated with sadness. Turns out yellows tend to be light. And so that's why people generally associate yellow with happiness.
Well, here we are both wearing dark tops. But you have a big smile on your face.
Well, the good news is our associations between colors and emotions don't necessarily influence how colors make us feel. So I'll unpack that for you. So people generally associate deep reds with the emotion anger. But UW-Madison is covered in red. And if that color actually made us angry compared to, say, the blue at Michigan, we might have some issues. And so just because we associate colors with certain concepts doesn't mean those colors necessarily make us feel that way. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done to understand how colors actually make us feel. We know a lot more about the associations.
So why do you do that research?
I am generally motivated by making a world that's easier for people to understand and more enjoyable to experience. So if we understand how people interpret meaning from colors, we can use color and design to make the world easier to interpret.
Okay. So talk about the Schloss Visual Reasoning Lab at UW-Madison. What all goes on there?
Yes. So,
is it a brightly colored place?
we have a very vivid turquoise couch and chairs that are a greener turquoise with a cool orange pattern on them. So I would say yes, but in in spare amounts. So in my lab, we have graduate students and undergraduate students, and we do research. And so we show people displays on computers or sometimes real-world objects, and we ask them to make judgments about them. And again, the goal is to understand how we can use color and design, and now we're starting to look at textures, not just colors, to understand how we can communicate better.
So textures. So give me an example of how color, probably color and texture together, I'm guessing.
So right now we're looking at textures and just grayscale, but we're also doing tactile textures. So we give people textures in boxes that they can't see and they touch them with their hands. So we want to understand if our findings that we've discovered with color extend outside of color to and even outside of vision to touch. So imagine that you have low vision or blindness, and you want to interpret a weather map or some political trends and data, but you can't see the visualization. So how can we design them in a way that people can understand them through touch instead? So we're trying to understand where our knowledge of vision can generalize or extend to touch, and where maybe we need to develop new kinds of knowledge when we're studying touch.
Wondering... Well, when you talked about touch, I was thinking about maps that are raised maps. But then I got thinking about maps that you might just look at on a screen, or the one that, you know, with the governor's photo on it, the printed ones. And they're all of, I'm trying to think, they're typical colors, I guess. But is there some science behind that with a map, you think?
Yes. So with a map, especially if you're using color to represent amounts of things, people have something called a dark is more bias, where they tend to think that darker colors mean more. So if I show you a map where I encode, I represent darker or I represent larger numbers, so greater population with darker colors, it'll be easier for people to interpret. But if the map represents something that is strongly associated with a light color, so say sunshine, then people will infer, say, a really vivid yellow will represent more than a dark gray. And so what this suggests is that we need to think about these associations people have between individual colors and concepts, and also these kinds of relations like dark is more. So one of the things my lab is doing is we're trying to understand all the different kinds of factors that contribute to how people will interpret colors, and then create an online tool that makes it really easy for people to design visualizations that will be easy for people to interpret. So several years ago, we made a tool that's available on our website called ColorGoracle, colorgoracle.com, I believe, but you can find it on our lab website. And for that, you can tell it how many colors you want, and it will give you a set of colors that are hopefully aesthetically preferable, meaning you'd like to look at them, and you can tell the colors apart visually. And so there can be trade-offs between preference and being able to see the difference between colors. I can unpack that if you're interested. But the main thing is that as someone without any design experience, you can go into the tool and say, I want three colors, and I want them to be in the reddish family, go, and it will generate colors for you that are useful in design. But what the tool does not yet do is it doesn't let you to say, I want to represent bananas, blueberries, and strawberries. You can't give it semantics or actual concepts yet to tell it what colors you want. And so that's, we're doing the science now to be able to make the tool even better. So it doesn't only help you make pretty designs that you can see the difference between the colors, but also you can tell what the colors mean.
But if I saw it, it also doesn't, if you're doing it for, like, let's say a marketing or to get somebody to, you know, pay attention to it, if it was three reds, that might look good to you, but is that going to be something that's going to capture other people's attention?
So marketing is an interesting question, because then you've got brand colors and you have capturing attention. So capturing attention you can get by having the colors be different from each other and can be very different from the background that they're on. But the brand coloring within this tool, you can actually say, my brand is blues and greens. And so you can tell it to design around those particular colors as well. So you can say, I don't want any reds at all, because that's my competitor's brand. And so, yeah, we can build those kinds of constraints.
All right. Luzine emailed to ask, how does pattern affect the perception or emotions associated with color? That's interesting.
That's an excellent question. And in the siloed world that my lab lives in. We're studying color as color just swatches and patterns in grayscale. So my work yet hasn't brought the two together, which I realize might sound silly, but that's the way we've been approaching it so far. But the idea is that the associations that you have with colors and with patterns are influenced by your lifetime of experiences. So if you see a color in a glossy material versus in a kind of more matte material, that might evoke different kinds of objects you've experienced in your lifetime. I'm trying to think of, I'm going to give a kind of potentially gross example. So for shades of brown, so if you have shades of brown that look like they're a chocolatey texture versus a biological waste texture, then the associations you have with those colors and textures combined will be different. Because of the combination of the spatial pattern in it as well as the color.
Christina in Glenwood City has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. We are going to paint the entire interior of our home, and I would like it to be a comfortable, inviting color. I don't have one in mind right now, and I'm wondering if there's a website or if what suggestions you have to help with our decision.
It's a great question. Part of that is just general associations with calmness. So generally, bluer, greener colors and lighter and less vivid colors are going to be more calm. But part of that is about your own personal preferences. So if I tell you that blues and greens are generally calm to people on average, but you have really negative associations with those colors. For example, one of my friends, I wanted to paint our lab back when I was a student. I wanted to paint it this beautiful teal color. And I was like, science suggests this is a really calm, great color. And he was like, there is no way I will let you put that color on the wall because it's the color that the doctor's office was when I was a kid. And when I see that color, it is the opposite of calm. I had to go there a lot. It was really stressful. So absolutely not. And so as you're thinking about what color to how to color your environment, part of it you can look at the science of people on average, but part of it is looking at yourself and what do you like to look at when you look at the samples, what makes you feel good or what makes you feel calm, and think about how you want to feel in the space.
Christina, there you go. Thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate it. You can join in too. The number to call 800-642-1234. Or you could email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Miller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News, talking about the science behind color with our guest today, Karen Schloss, Associate Professor of Cognition at UW-Madison's Department of Psychology and the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. She leads the Schloss Visual Reasoning Lab, SVRL. There we go. You can join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. In football, famously, the University of Iowa has painted, many years ago they started this, they painted the visiting team colors where they, you know, their locker room pink. Because they thought that it would make them calm and not aggressive. And I think even a prison's done it too.
So there was some older work that suggested that might be true, but has since been debunked with a lot more careful science. So there was a study a long time ago that looked at the painting prisons pink and suggested it might be a soothing, calming color. But turns out there were a lot of problems with the study. And so when people later on did much more careful studies, they found no evidence that pink is any more calming or better than, say, white walls.
Well, I thought it was kind of cool. I remember some of the coaches kind of complaining about it and not liking to have that kind of color there. Are there colors that are known to, are there colors that evoke particular emotions?
So generally, there's a lot more work on the associations people have with emotions rather than felt emotions. But there is some evidence that the more brighter, more vivid colors can be more arousing, so more activating to the system. And potentially redder colors also being a bit more arousing or activating than, say, bluer colors.
And do a majority of people perceive color pretty much the same?
That is a deep philosophical question. There is, so let's say that you and I both have what we call typical color vision. There is absolutely no way for me to know what you're experiencing. So as we look at the same colored patch, there's no way for me to know what your experience is like to be able to say that we are experiencing the same thing. What we can do is see if you and I can see the differences between colors. So I can say, I see a difference between these two colors. And you say, no, I don't see the difference between those two colors. And so if that happens, then we know we have different kinds of color vision experiences in that way. But there's the old question of, is your red the same as my red? From an experience perspective,
yeah.
No way to know, which is kind of terrifying and also exciting to think that your sensory experiences in that way are kind of private and special just to you.
I, at the same time, now we can look at our microphones, and there's both a red lights on those microphones, and they tell us that the microphones are live. And even if I visualize the red differently from you, I'd still know that I should be careful how I speak when that red light's on.
That is correct, because you have a mapping between the word red and that experience. So when we both have the experience we have when we see that red color, we call it red. And so in that case, we can talk about color in a way that we have common ground or common knowledge. Whether we're seeing that the red is the same is kind of neither here nor there when we're talking about using color for communication. So knowing that the microphone on and people can hear us right now.
Billy in Wataka, Minnesota. We'll go to you. Hi, Billy.
Hi. I was wondering if you've been paying attention to the interaction of color, like Joseph Albers had written a major work on quite a while ago.
Absolutely.
And how a color looks differently depending on the background color.
Yes, and Albers is one of my most favoriteest painters. I love going to the MoMA in San Francisco and just standing in front of his work and looking how he was exploring color through his paintings. Yes, absolutely. So colors will look different depending on the background. And so as we're thinking about color in design, especially in data visualization, if you think this color looks, let's say, this shade of red on a white background, and then you put it on a different background and it looks totally different, then that can completely change the meaning that color is communicating. Also, Albers did beautiful work on color combinations, so which colors are harmonious or look good together. And his work countered some of the previous claims that complementary colors are harmonious or preferable. So if I ask you, if I give you two colors, let's say orange and a blue, and I say, how harmonious are these? How well do the colors go together? Versus I give you, instead of an orange and a blue, I give you like a tealish blue, a bluish green, and a blue. Generally, people will say the more similar colors look more harmonious. And my dissertation work actually was trying to understand, so test some of the ideas that were in Albers' writings, as well as writings from other color theorists. And we find that our data actually aligns most with Albers as opposed to some of the other theorists.
So colors that are sort of closer together are going to be more pleasing to people.
Exactly. So colors that are more similar in hue, so like red, yellow, green, blue, closer together that way, will be more harmonious and also more preferable. They'll like them more. But they like colors with lightness contrast, so like a light blue with a darker blue. So they're different in how light versus dark they are, but they're both blues.
Hmm. Well, speaking of blues, I was with my daughter at Disney World. And we were in this rest area, and there was a color blue there that I liked a lot. So I took a picture of it because I was painting my house back here in Madison. And I took that home and I showed it to the painter, and he said, "Oh yeah, I can do that." And he painted it this blue, which it was a color that you saw a lot in Florida, but not as much in Madison. So my house stands out a little bit. But I live on the east side of Madison, where colors and people are... Well, the people there seem to like it a lot.
That's fantastic. And that raises the interesting question of why did you like that color in the first place? And so a lot of my work has been on understanding why people like some colors more than others and why people even have color preferences in the first place. And so the idea is that when you were looking at that particular shade of blue that you liked so much, it brought to mind all of the kinds of things that you associate with that shade of blue. So if I were to ask you what comes to mind when you think of that, about that blue, what comes to mind for you right now?
Well, what comes to mind right at this instant was it's the same color of a shirt that I had when I was a young guy. And I loved that shirt.
There you go. And it's also the color of, say, sky when it's beautiful to play outside.
Yes.
And clear water and all kinds of positive things. And on average, blues are generally associated with really positive things, and it's really hard to think of negative things that are blue, which is why, on average, blue is the most preferred color in many cultures across the world. Not in all, but in many. And so the idea is that your preference for that color is determined by how much you like all the things that are associated with that color, and that's what shapes your color preferences generally. And so that's why also different people would have different color preferences. So I might have experiences, even with that beautiful blue color, maybe it was the doctor's office I didn't want to go to or some other reason. And so my preference for that same color would be influenced by how much I like all the things associated with that color. And so what that means is that we can explain why different people have different color preferences, but why our color preferences can change over time. So if, let's say, you love that color, but then you go back to Disney World and you have a really terrible vacation for whatever reason, and you see that color all around, then that would put a little notch in how much you like that color, and you might want to change your walls when you get home.
Well, it's the outside of the house, and believe me, at the cost of a 3-story house to paint it, I will not be changing that.
Let's keep
color.
All positive experiences with that blue for you, then.
Bill in Oshkosh, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, how do people know how animals see colors? You know, we hear research about certain animals seeing colors differently or not at all. Do you know how we figure that out?
Yes. So we can understand animals' ability to tell the difference between colors by giving them kinds of tasks where they're rewarded if they can say these two, as I say, I'm anthropomorphizing animals now. If it's a pigeon and they can peck on which swatch has two different colors versus which swatch is the same. So we can do these kinds of behavioral measures. Similarly with dogs, if a dog can't tell the difference, let's say you train up a dog to walk towards the food's going to be in the yellow bowl, and then you give them food in, say, a yellow bowl and then another color that they can't tell the difference between that and the yellow, then they'll go to both bowls equally. But if they can consistently go to the bowl that they've learned is the bowl that has their food, then you can tell that they can see the difference between those colors. So through these kinds of tests, we can tell which colors animals can tell apart and which ones they can't.
Interesting. Thank you for that question. Vern and Boyd called to say that three or more primary colors viewed on a computer are difficult to focus on simultaneously.
So light, as it bends through the eye, longer wavelength light will bend as it goes through the lens different amounts than shorter wavelength light. So longer wavelength light meaning reds and shorter wavelength light meaning blues. And so if you have light that is very, very long wavelength and very short wavelength, where it focuses on the eye will be different. And it's hard to get both into focus at the same time. And so that can lead sometimes to one color looking closer to you and the other one further away. And if they are right up against each other, it can kind of look like they're almost vibrating and it's visually uncomfortable.
And different cultures ascribe, you know, as we talk about colors, ascribe different meanings to color, do they not?
They do, yes. And so these could be cultural conventions or symbolism. They can also be differences in the kind of experiences they have with objects in their world. And so these cultural differences should and do influence cultural difference in things like color preferences and interpretations of color meaning, because both of those are influenced by the kinds of associations that people have.
Ginger email, what do or should animators consider when making a character a particular color? Anything Any good stories there?
I love that question. I would say, what kind of ideas do you want that character to evoke? So if you want the character to evoke ideas of fun and playful, you would make really vibrant, vivid colors. If you want the character to evoke sadness or seriousness, it would be darker grayish sort of colors. So I would look at the findings on the emotional associations people have with colors, and that can be a way to approach coloring character design.
Well, here we've only scratched the surface of color, Karen. And we'll come. I'd love to have you back sometime. We can talk again. I'd like to know more about your research, and let's do that.
Absolutely. I would love to.
Karen Schloss, our guest, Associate Professor of Cognition at the UW-Madison's Department of Psychology and the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. Her visual reasoning lab studies how people interpret meaning from various visual features with a focus on color. Great to have her with us, and we will have her back, and I hope you'll be back as well. Great to have you with us today. Just a reminder, we've got a team here. Our producers, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnott, our technical directors, Jeff Robbins and Lee Rayburn, and our executive producer is the vacationing Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.